On this week's show, discussing a Trojan horse for construction tech with Michael Philippakis from Loris. In this week's news, hiring for innovation, EV growth, funding rounds, and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're here with my last minute homeboy, always here for the save, Nathan Wood. Nathan, thanks for being the last minute guy to jump on and help me out.
Well, you can thank all of the roundtable moderators that now have less preparation going into our roundtable this week. But good to make the time for you.
Hey, well, that's great. And they can chuck me under the bus. You know, I'm worth being chucked under the bus every once in a while.
Absolutely.
My CPC friends coming to my aid. There is a roundtable this week, huh?
April 12th. Yeah, I mean, it'll probably be gone by the time this is out. But getting folks back together from our February summit and talking about three out of our six topics. And actually, your topic's one of them. So I expect you over there and be digging into those shared pains and working towards more of these shared gains.
Yeah, well, keeping everything going from this year's AEC Integration Summit is going to be awesome, man, because we created a lot of momentum. This will be out after it. But hopefully it's just another sign for the next one we do. So it was awesome.
More YouTube recordings. Sign up for that while you're signing up for ConTech Crew now that you guys are on YouTube, right?
That's right. We are. Thanks for the plug. We're youtube.com/@theConTech Crew. Make sure you subscribe. Check out all that stuff from the CPC as well, because, you know, you might know a friend or two that are in some of them videos.
It's a lot of friendly overlaps.
Yes, there are. And Michael Philippakis, thanks for sitting down today. It's great to have you with us, man.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Rocking that Loris cap. I like that. That's a hot cap, man. I mean, I like it. I didn't grab one when I met you, but I like that. I might have to grab you one next time I see you.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely get you guys some. Yeah, I figure if the company doesn't go well, we can always sell hats for a living. So
I like the layout, right? Well, hey, at least you came up with great swag, right?
Yeah, we've got some good designing folks. So yeah, appreciate it, man. Good to be here.
That's awesome. We'll have more from Michael in a minute. You're gonna really want to stick around for that one. But before we do, we gotta pause for the cause. So I'm here with Christina Henkai, who's put together a first-of-its-kind event that's going to integrate learning and innovation with play. Tell people a little bit about you and why you started this event.
Over the years, when I'm going to all these different construction conferences and stuff, I'd always find at least one new connection where I found out something amazing they were doing. And it was like so cool, and it was making so much impact, and it was effective for project. And no one knew about it. Most of us are tired of some of the same old ways. We're looking for something new. We're looking for something innovative that's not just talk and pretty, but actually actionable. And so that's why I made sure that it's focused on workshops specifically. When you go, you're going to find people that are, you know, on the spectrum of where they are in the journey of trying to do continuous improvement or any other buzzword that you want to use, but improve our industry.
Who do you think should be going this? Who, if they're listening in, who should come to the event?
Yeah, I think anyone that has ever had an idea of like, you know what, it shouldn't be this way, or we can do this better. This is a place where you'll go and all of that curiosity and creativity will be sparked. You'll learn from some people that are further along in that journey where they have an exercise already that they're working on with project teams and you can collaborate with them. It's only gonna be 40 people. So every single person you meet, I think is gonna come from a different aspect of our industry.
Awesome. So when is it and where's it gonna be?
It is one full day, jam-packed with workshops on Wednesday, June 14th in Austin, Texas.
How do people sign up?
It's my website, so built with the T at the end, and .com/play. or you can message me and I will just get you all set up. Easy peasy.
Well, we already said it, but you got to check us out because we're back on YouTube. We've got shorts. We've got a little special nuggets here and there just for our boy, Rob McKinney. Check out youtube.com/@thecontechcrew and get everything sent to your inbox. All right. So Michael Filipakis, CEO and co-founder of Loris. We're going to get into Loris. We're always about what you're coming out with. And I think this is a unique one, man. This was my, so everybody knows this listening in, this was my nugget from ConExpo ConAg. And man, finding a nugget there is a needle in a haystack. So I was really excited that this one came out of it, man. So thanks for jumping in, Michael, and being a part of the show.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. It was great to meet you out in Las Vegas. It's definitely a wild one coming back after the last COVID year that kind of got shut down. And yeah, people were really ready to go out there in Vegas. So it was good. I'm glad we found each other through the masses.
Yeah, that was crazy. Because yeah, the last one, everybody was, you know, running mass exodus from there. I forgot about that. But that was a topic of a few conversations over a cocktail or two.
Yeah, that was a weird feeling where they're just shutting down halfway and people were like, man, we got to catch our flights before we're stuck out here. And yeah, that was a weird one.
It was. Well, give me a little background. I mean, you got something going on now that I think we're going to jump into pretty quick, but give people a brief history of why here and why do you care about bringing something that bridges the gap from, you know, the office to the field?
Yeah, appreciate it, Jeff. Yeah, my whole background's really been construction. I started renovating houses with my dad growing up and then studied construction management at Ohio State. So it's kind of like what I wanted to do. And when I graduated, I went to go work for Turner and worked for them for about 10 years. So that was a really great experience there. My first project out of college was working on the 600 million mega hospital on Ohio State's campus. And it was actually the biggest project in Ohio State history at the time, which was really cool being an alumni, getting to go work on a project like that. They're actually building a bigger one right next to it now, this billion-dollar massive, you know, tallest thing on campus structure. So dwarfing the one I spent 3 years on, but that's how it goes. So started there and really got, you know, boots on the ground, engineer, superintendent, got to understand how these mega projects get coordinated and put together and the logistics of putting something together with a laydown the size of a postage stamp, and spent some time in the field on the office side of, you know, risk management and cost and understanding how our budgets work and how we really make and lose money. And then eventually was out here in the San Francisco Bay Area where I am now as a project manager with Turner, and just ran a couple of different projects at a time and did data centers and did transit centers and ground ups and renos and kind of everything in between. So know the industry pretty well. And yeah, to your point, that's kind of what gave birth to the idea for Loris, was struggling with some of these issues firsthand on the projects that I was running.
Yeah, I mean, dig into that. You got, I'm sure, and there are, it seems like this follows me in my life. I don't know if it's just an Ohio State thing or not, but like that you guys are everywhere. But I have all these Buckeyes that I really didn't realize I had Buckeyes. I live out in the mountains here, and about four or five of my original buddies out here, we're Buckeyes. And then, you know, now we got you. I think Brian Skripak's won. Alex Belkoffer's for sure won. So, you got like a contingent of those Buckeyes out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're just loud about it. You know, I think there's an equal amount of Buckeyes as everybody else, but we just, if you know one, they're going to let you know that they are one. So that's,
yeah, that's true. That's true. And I love that. You know, we built the biggest thing on campus for then. Isn't that the story of everybody in construction? It was the biggest at the time.
Right.
That leads right to why we're doing what we're doing, why you built what you built, because it's not like we're building things that are smaller, less complex, you know, just easier, right? We're not building smaller now. We're building bigger. So give people a little of idea of some of the problems you saw that kind of led to Loris.
Yeah, sure thing. So yeah, I think first was from like the hardware solution, and it was string lights, just struggling with the string lights on every single project, no matter how big or small it was, really being the bane of our existence. We argued with our very, you know, expensive, rare electrician trade labor to be putting work in place, getting conduit in walls for our inspections. And they're messing around with temp lights and, you know, restringing stuff or replacing bulbs, and just a huge waste of their time. And then I remember doing safety inspections and walks, and 60% of my inputs were from string lights, you know, the wires on the ground, or guys unsafely on ladders, or them, you know, getting wired in incorrectly and, you know, unsafely. And then the last piece was the Ohio State job, for example. That thing was lit up like a Christmas tree for 3 years straight. You know, the lights are on during the day, on weekends, on the floors where nobody's working. So it's just a huge waste of power and energy. So yeah, that was the hardware solution, where we've created now a battery powered mobile light tower that'll stay lit for weeks at a time. So let's get rid of the wires. Let's get rid of the slip, trip, and fall hazards. No more need to string wires. No more keep them on all the time. So we're saving kilowatt hours, increasing the safety. So safer, leaner, greener from a hardware perspective. But that was really just the initial solution of our first prototypes. And what it's evolved to now, as you mentioned, kind of the Trojan horse, is we've got a power source with our battery. We have a reason to be in the room with the lighting. It's fundamental to every project, right? First thing on, last thing off. Now we can bring in a whole bunch of other sensors and intelligence to the project and really help the project operate with this new kind of technology wave that's coming through.
I really like that idea, because I'm sure people listening are like, wait, you brought us a light pole? Like, really? Like, come on. And I'll be honest, got to give this hats off to Jay Schneider. Jay was the one who was at your booth, who I was going to meet up with, and, you know, give him a little flack now on the way there. I'm like, as I'm pulling up, I'm like, really, Jay, a light? Like, come on, man. But as is usual with him, there was a lot more to this. But lighting is fundamental. I mean, trip hazards, I've, you know, worked and walked job sites myself, and you see them all the time. I never thought about the fact that we're pulling what's one of our most precious commodities, the electrical labor, off mm-hmm. to do lighting, to replace light bulbs, to stay on top of things. There's still a lot there that I didn't think about. But how did that help it get received would be my question, because I think that was some of the uniqueness for me.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit comes down to cost, right? I mean, trade electricians, you know, a lot of times, you know, $100 an hour, and they're when they're taking it off, when you're estimating 10 man hours for every 100 lineal feet of string lights. So it's this huge time suck for like you said, our very valuable labor hours that we need to be putting work in place. So I think that initial kind of barrier to entry of like, hey, this is just going to make our job sites better. We don't have to waste labor hours just increasing the safety of our lighting system was a good wedge into the projects. And then we're like, oh, wow, now our entire project has Wi-Fi. Wow, now I don't have to, you know, go walk onto the 10th floor if I want to check the progress of my building. I have this full live look in. I'm able to check in on 5 of my projects before I've had my morning cup of coffee, right? I know that my crane showed up at 6 a.m. when I was supposed to. I know that my crew showed up at 5 a.m. when they were supposed to. You know, I know no one jumped the fence and stole the material that I needed to do my work. So that's that accountability, and that be able to live look in has really kind of allowed people to be like, oh yeah, it does make sense to make this change in my project.
Yeah, I can hear you going, Nathan. What do you got?
Oh, I mean, I'm putting on my DPR innovation hat and gonna dig in on a couple things here. Because one thing I'm looking on the website about, you know, actual like user management and the ability to, you know, have this level of user management. So I guess first question, at what point did that come in this whole story? And two, I guess kind of like technically, how is it, you know, they have to have the app downloaded, or like what is that that gives you the ability to do the user management?
Yeah, I'll answer the second one first. We have a web app that you can control from any kind of device or your phone. So you can, you know, see the photos, get your security alerts straight to your text message on your cell phone. But we're also wanting to integrate, you know, the photos that we capture come from every corner of the job site on, you know, an instant basis. So for us, we can share these photo images with some groups that are doing cooler AI stuff or machine learning stuff or percent complete stuff that have been around for a while. And instead of, you know, the user, the construction manager, having to go walk the project and go capture the images, we can just automate that data capture, where we can take a image of every step of the project and feed it into, you know, an open space or a Struction site or a Procore, an Autodesk. We're really agnostic who we can share our information with. the key is we can automate it, and it's, you know, great clear clarity photos, well lit, obviously, because it's on a thing. So you're getting consistent good data. And what we're seeing with a lot of AI and machine learning is, you know, the quality of the images that you're getting in is the quality of the data that you're getting out. So for us to be able to automate and bring clear images and stuff to these platforms is a way that we can do it. Or you can still use the LoRa's platform if you want to. How we got to this point was, yeah, I think our first prototype was really just a large battery and an LED. It was just, you know, kind of bootstrapped, put together with some engineers and kind of made it work and rolled it out to a project that I was managing. And then, yeah, we built a second version in 2019 and we launched it, ENR Future Tech. And we had some basic Wi-Fi and we're starting to play around with some cameras and stuff like that. So it's really come from having it on job sites, getting feedback from DPR teams, from Turner teams, from, you know, Mortensen teams, and seeing what they like about it, what they want to change with, you know, the light source or the device suite that's on there, the life, you know, the lifespan of it. And so we kind of took all those learnings from the first two versions, and then that's evolved into our current version that we have out now. And we have, Wi-Fi, infrared motion sensors, 360 cameras, and sirens for security and progress tracking. So yeah, it's really exciting. And the future of where we can go with all the devices that we can plug in and connect to our units is really kind of endless. We are agnostic with any kind of device and technology that needs a power source or a connectivity layer or real estate, you know, a reason to be in the room on a construction site. We're happy to kind of work and partner with all these folks.
So when you say power source, because I was thinking about that, of this trade-off between, yes, it can be wireless and you can have some level of power, or like, why not just, if you're adding all these things together, add a spider box, you know, kind of to that integration as well. And maybe it's like, you know, you plug it in and you get more power, or you don't plug it in. Like, is that something that's ever come up in discussions, or as you're prototyping stuff, where did, yeah, that enhanced level power versus just basic power come in?
Yeah. We've looked at kind of what that trade-off would be for power draw and lifespan of the unit. So we have like an inverter on our units, for example, that you can charge, you know, tool batteries or laptops or cell phones or whatever it is. But we also kind of limited the watt output so you're not running chop saws off of it or, you know, grinders and welders. So once you start looking at some of the larger tool power draws on job sites, it's, you know, those are better off just kind of being hardwired into a spider box. But yeah, we actually, on our product roadmap is a spider box version where the, you know, the main power is coming into the unit and it can be, you know, kind of stationary, providing a lot of outlets. So that's something that we're definitely thinking about in the future, which is interesting. And so, yeah, you know, I think balancing, you know, what we want to be able to charge on job sites and what we can provide power for. And then, you know, we still have the spider boxes on job sites, but then the rest of the job site is wireless, which is really great. All the cutting happens there. The charging of the lifts happens back at the spider box. And then you don't have to run wires on any of the rest of your floor plate, which is really nice experience.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a couple of the bigger problems we've had with adoption over time, right? Like some of the problems for open space, instruction site, and others that are doing the capture, reality capture from that 360 camera is the lighting. Mm-hmm. Like the walks are great, everything's great, but shoot, if it's dark, it's dark, right? Like the 360 camera got the problem of, oh, I was 6 inches to the right of the outlet and didn't get the picture of it. But if the lights are off, the lights are off, right? It's not going to help. It's also where the work is happening, mm-hmm. right? And so that's critically where you want most of your tracking to be. Most of your progress work, everything should be in the place that work is getting done. So, you know, you're not wasting time. And I thought it was pretty unique that you know, you're talking about being able to charge a laptop, right? Charge an iPad. These are now critical tools as much as, you know, you're not doing the grinders and the chop saws, but as your drills and the other things that you're using, they're just as critical now, right? So you got to look where you're laying new things. You got to look at, you know, maybe you're checking the plans out on it. It's an interesting expansion into the problem. And Wi-Fi has just notoriously been a problem for us. And I'm so intrigued to see that come along with it. I mean, was that just kind of, did you just happenstance onto that? Was that a problem you guys saw a lot? Like, how did that one just jump in there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really been feedback from our customers and kind of what they're seeing. You know, once we have this, you know, 7.5 kilowatt hour battery, so it's very large. You know, we've got a lot going on with the hardware. Adding, you know, a Wi-Fi router and AP is, you know, pennies on the dollar to our overall bill of materials cost. So that, you know, we kind of had an open, you know, platform of we can add sensors. And then, yeah, you know, we hear a million ideas of, you know, LiDAR or Bluetooth tag tracking or, you know, robotic legs or all these things. And we really have to kind of parse it down to like, okay, what do people really need right now? You know, we're eventually we can get to these things. But yeah, the Wi-Fi and the security piece was huge. And that's kind of what we wanted to tackle first. And to your point, yeah, Wi-Fi has always traditionally been, you know, relegated to the trailers, right? And you've got your Wi-Fi, your trailer, and then the job site is a complete dead zone. So now for us to be able to extend that network, create our own unique network on every floor of the building is great. Cause like you said, you know, not only are folks out there with their iPads, but they're setting up job offices out there. Right. And they have a table and desk and they have their laptop out and they're out in the field, like in a Connex box or just, you know, on the first floor ground in the corner. And they, you know, they're doing their full suite of works and they need Wi-Fi. So, you know, we're able to just pull one up to a job site office and we have six or seven, you know, humans working off of one unit's Wi-Fi. So being able to have these, enable these job site offices is pretty
cool. I guess something that I have to imagine comes up is, you know, with so many more people on the Wi-Fi, if it is the same network that you're now just extending from the trailer to the job site, then you're probably, you know, going to cut down that bandwidth or are people actually having to buy more internet bandwidth or what are your recommendations when folks do extend that Wi-Fi to the job site? Cause it, you still need the source of it. Right. And then it's just, you're able to distribute it through.
So yeah, we're actually creating our own unique Wi-Fi network. So when you go there, it's Loris Wi-Fi. It's its own thing. It's connecting. Each unit is a node on a mesh network. So each unit has its own connectivity. And then when it doesn't have connectivity, it meshes with its buddy next to it. So we can actually bring Wi-Fi below grade into like areas that don't have cell phone signal because they're meshing and connecting with their buddies that do get signal. To your point, though, there are areas that are like in the middle of nowhere. We've done a job like in the middle of nowhere, Nevada, where there is no cell phone signal. And in that case, we do extend the Wi-Fi from the trailer. So that would be a case. Yeah. Depending on what your bandwidth limitations are, that would be a consideration. But yeah, we're creating our own unique network separate from what's in the trailer.
That's crazy. And that's a sign of the times that a cell network is, you know, just the preferred default network as opposed to trying to link into Wi-Fi and, you know. For those of us that, yeah, look back, you know, 10, 15 years, it has come a long way, as slow as it feels like it's been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's come. Well, I'm just thinking back to this, and I'm going to kick it to the former, you know, our contact crew chief, James Benham. It used to always be about where the material piles were and where the bathrooms were. And it's like, I don't care how many times you go to the bathroom. I care how far you have to walk, because there is a moment in time where moving the bathrooms is more cost effective than having employees walking that far. You just did this with the office, because I imagine there are moments where getting together around a laptop, getting together around, you know, the digital version of the plans is important and working as a team. So now if you've taken and not everybody doesn't have to go get on the lift and go down and go back and have a meeting there, you can have a meeting where the work is being done, pointing it out and still accessing everything. You've saved all of us time and money.
Yeah, you're nailing it. Absolutely. We want that to be an extension, complete network across the job site, where eventually, you know, this could be, you know, kind of like the Alexis or, you know, Google Home of like, hey, you know, Loris, you know, what do I have got going on in this area? What open RFIs do I have? Or being able to send information to the office, to the field, you know, both ways, building that automated bridge between the office and the field is really what we're excited about in the future.
That's awesome. I can imagine you've got like, Chris Callen was just showing this in Plot, the guys behind Plot. He's got like a Fire TV or something going on. I'm surprised somebody hasn't already taken an Alexa, plugged it in, put a little thing and just slapped it on there. And it's like, hey, Alexa, I need this or whatever. And for all you driving that or at home that just had that happen, it's hilarious. But yeah, you could totally talk to it. Like I, you know, that's the future. You know, you hit on it too before. I'm a huge low emission Bluetooth, you know, sensors fan and the accuracy and the things that it can provide us. And, you know, we've got groups out there like Genda working on it that, you know, it's always been a bit about the enigma of how do you get them connected? How do you talk to them all the time? Like, yeah, there's apps in the phones, et cetera, but a device like this can be the center of some of it. What are some of the, you know, kind of the future steps you're thinking about?
to your point, yeah, I think that Bluetooth tag tracking is a big one. Not only understanding where, tools and materials and humans are on job sites, getting better location of where our beacons are, and just understanding those workflows. Because, to your point, there's so much change on a construction site every day, and one line of sight never stays, consistently. So the nice part about ours, like you said, it follows the work, kind of evolves with the project. It kind of goes where the work is. In the future, I think Bluetooth tag tracking, I think environmental sensing is probably one that's kind of pretty up and close for us, where if we can start, there's a lot of great sensors out there. We don't have to recreate that wheel ourselves. We can take, some of the leading sensors and give them a power source and a location on a job site. So now we're, sensing water or fire leaks or VOCs or vibration or sound, all these things on job sites. Hmm. And then I would say, some LiDAR stuff we're looking at, potentially mass notification systems where if you need to evacuate your building. And cool, that really leads to the future vision of really just getting a data lake of information where you have data points from different regions across the country, across the globe, different industries. We've done some oil and gas, mining, disaster relief, music festivals. We've done a bunch of different verticals too, where it's the same, power, Wi-Fi, connectivity, and security. So now we're getting these data points, spread across across the world, all automatically coming in to our system about, not only the man flow and the man tracking, but the environments of what's happening on each one of these projects and the photos that's happening. So we're getting this awesome set of data that comes in on a, every hour basis, every minute basis, whenever we want it to. And I think that's going to be the really power of the system moving forward.
That's crazy. I'm already thinking I want one for my glamping setup. I'm already like, dude, my glamping setup needs this. I need it. Like, sorry, but that's where I went. I had to go there. No, I mean, there's so much to that with the lake of information that you can funnel and be able to inform things in both directions is, and alerting, those things are super important. The funny one is I'm thinking back to, and I'm the one who's got to be careful here, but there are some jurisdictions where I could see the noise levels. There mm-hmm. is arguments mm-hmm. consistently about decibel levels in certain mm-hmm. areas that I have experience with that have come down to blows over, do I use my phone and some app? And it's like, no, that's, you could just have it right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not only that, but yeah, to your point, if you have a sound consideration, and you don't have 10 power and you can't run a generator, like you're kind of out of options, or you got to have something quiet that's not going to wake the neighbors or do whatever else. So yeah, it's really exciting hearing all the ideas that folks have for it. Some are just like, okay, I'll think like, yeah, we can put a keg of beer in there and have plug in my microwave and stuff, so you hear all kinds of stuff, but that's the exciting part where people really see the value and they want to see it grow and see the product features evolve.
All right. Well, here's one more then. Cause mine always goes to communication. And so all these things are bringing information from the field to the office, but that idea of truly when the field needs the office, bringing the office to the field, and it being that kind of, you walk it wherever you want, but when you push that button to call the project engineer or call the architect or call the safety guy, whoever you need, they get on their phone and all of a sudden they can now see 360 wherever you are. They can talk back to you. You can have that, two-way conversation and have that whole call recorded and actually answer an RFI literally in real time and have that answer transcribed and be on your way potentially. So there's one more for your pocket.
No, I love it. It's really great. We actually had one of our DPR teams actually, when they were doing punch list, they were like, just had their laptop mm-hmm. on the stand and they were rolling that thing across, had the architect looped in, and we're able to like share photos as needed. And that's really good. I love that idea. And yeah, that two-way communication is going to be more and more important. And yeah, just building that bridge, like you said, it's everything that we did at Turner, when I was in the office or an engineer or the executives or whoever, it's all to support the field, right? It's all to make the field successful. It all goes into making sure that job site is doing what they need and have what they need on a daily basis. So.
Yeah, it's so much about, in your example there, Nathan, it's so much about not wasting time, Right? You talked about the value of every resource that's out there, Michael. It doesn't matter who it is that are on the controls out there. They have a cost, and there's not enough of them, and there's not enough of any of us in that respect to support everything we need to be. And then, you know, I remember back to one of my clients, I think 6 or 7 years ago, and they were like, why do we need these 360 cameras? Why do we need that stuff? And I'm like, well, let me just pose a few questions for you. How many job sites do you have going? And, you know, the one dude was like, well, I've got 10. And I'm like, so you've got 10 with lots of crews of people, right? This is a drywall framer finisher type. And I was like, so how many times do you have to spend driving to the problem? And it's not a problem. And right. He goes, a lot. Are you a construction company that's inundated with applications? Are you struggling to get technology adoption? Are you worried you're creating data silos? We refer to that as gray work. You want to learn more about gray work and how leading construction companies are getting past it? Then join me at QuickBase's Empower 2024. Go to quickbase.com/empower. I go, so what if you could look and say, that's not really a problem, or that is a problem, and you could do it from right here? Even if that was an hour later, because at that point in time, like, you know, think about 7 years ago when it came to 360s and the speed at which you could do those things, it wasn't as fast. But now you're talking about, especially in collaborative delivery, where you have all the stakeholders involved, right? And you need that critical feedback. You're not sure which person's answering that RFI. Is it the architect that's answering it? Is it the owner that's answering it? Is there an engineer that needs to weigh in? Like, those are people that are hard to triangulate and get in the same place at the same time. Now you can just do it that way and get the answer to the question while the crew's still standing there. Because, earliest learning when I was at the masonry company was, if people are standing around, we're losing money. That's profit. That is our fee erosion right there. If anybody's waiting for an answer and not working. But then again, if they're doing the wrong thing, that's how we get that rework bucket, right? And have to go back, or somebody takes risk, right? You're talking about de-risking projects as much as we possibly can. A lot of that de-risking is about understanding currently where we are. So, you know, you guys can provide a lot of that information back and forth. I just think it's and I'm just so enamored that it, you know, at the other things that can be built off of it. I have this idea. So you wanted ideas here. I have this idea now that we wire up Spot, and Spot's pulling them around for us. Because good. That keg of beer is tough to pull. No, we had a hackathon a while back, and I was like, Spot's cool and all. Don't get me wrong. I think it's an awesome innovation, and I think the robotics behind Atlas themselves are going to create things, secondary things that are going to be far more impactful than any one thing they've created along the way, in my opinion. But we always did this hackathon where it was like, oh, how could we provide like a happy hour to the winning crew that did the most work? And it was like, okay, well, we'll get Spot and we'll build this thing and it'll pull it over to there. For I'm like, well, now it could just bring Loris with it.
There you go. Yeah. It could be a charging port for that little dog. It makes sense. I mean, I think it's just, Spot's a really good example of like, how do we automate this data capture? How do we prevent, you know, our engineers from walking, you know, 3 million square feet of a project every day and not having to do that? So, yeah, I think Spot's, you know, an interesting solution. I think it's got a while to go. We're seeing folks, you know, flying drones on the outside, and there's some cool tech that can capture, you know, the outside of a building. And yeah, for us, we really want to extend that real-time vision to every floor on the inside of the building too. So to your point, even if you're not driving several hours, if I want to go see what's going on level 20 and I'm talking to you in my trailer, you know, I got to go walk out the yard, I got to wait for the buck hoist, I got to, you know, do all this. It's a whole, you know, that's a half hour journey just in itself, where I could just come in and say, boom, what's going on? Did they get the drywall in? I don't have to go walk up there and go see what's going on.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is about that efficiency, is that real-time capture. And then, but I've got to imagine that the feedback of the users in the field is that it's non-intrusive. I mean, look, Spot's kind of intrusive, I'll be honest. Like, how many, look, we can go to jump off of Spot for a second. We can go to Dusty Robotics. Mm. And, you know, Dusty Robotics had to put googly eyes on the thing so that it was less scary and people stopped kicking it. So that is a true story.
Did not know that.
Yeah, that is the reason. I mean, because again, bridging the field, you know, the office to the field, bridging the gap to technology, you have to think about the humans that you're impacting. And whether they're right or wrong in their assumption that you're here to steal their jobs or something, it's a true fear, right? Their reality, their perception of reality is their reality. So we have to make things that are far less intrusive, that are far more conducive to what they do. And like I said, I mean, I've been making fun of you from the beginning for it, that it's just a light pole, but that's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to instantly kick the dog thing over with the laser head or the robot rolling around that looks, you know, and yeah. Googly eyes helped. And this, so your guys are really, that's why we called it the Trojan horse to tech, right? Because yeah. it's slipping in and we've got to make them comfortable. At the Contech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems. And we've always believed in our sponsors. So much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype. And it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. So listen, put your spreadsheets on ice and leave your email behind for the decision-making platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. And I'm wondering if you have any of those stories where, you know, those people that you probably thought were just going to deal have turned around and said, wait, we need more of these, or there's a use for this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, to your point. Yeah. There's a lot of fatigue with that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of app fatigue. I think we're seeing, you know, we hear about innovation fatigue, and I think a lot of it's app fatigue. So having a piece of hardware, having something tangible is definitely, you know, kind of piques people's interest. Like, okay, this isn't just another login I have to do. This is something that's physically helping my project out. So that's an interesting kind of angle where, yeah, you know, we kind of see a successful deployment. You have a top-down champion, you know, an innovation manager, project lead, a project executive that's like, hey, we want to use this on this project. But then there has to be that bottom-up champion as well, that, you know, the super user in the field, the superintendent or the engineer that's going to be, you know, making sure this thing works in the field. So, you know, kind of finding those two people, I think, is your first hurdle. But then, yeah, once you're on the job site, people are like, what is this? You know, what does it do? What is going on? And then once you realize, oh, yeah, you can charge your cell phone and your tool here, they're like, great. Oh, you can connect to the Wi-Fi and take your drawings. Like, oh, this is even more accepting. That would say the one piece of pushback that we've had is the units have a 360 camera on them. And that's not always, they're like, well, so you're watching me do my work now? And we're like, okay. So we knew that we were going to have to kind of deal with that. I think the big differentiator, what's eased people's minds are, it's not a video camera. It actually only takes still photos with our units. So it's like, hey guys, we're not watching you all the time. This is snapping, you know, a couple times a day to track progress, or it's snapping after hours to track security to keep your tool safe. We're trying to keep, you know, the tools and the material on the job site safe. So once they got past that, like, hey, big brother is not watching me kind of thing, and this is here for the safety of my tools and to help me do my work, that's usually that kind of first few week learning process. But then it's, you know, everyone understands what the use is, and that kind of goes away.
Yeah. Nathan, you got to love a good whiff 'em.
Well, yeah, not only that, and also just even another one, Wissiati, what you see is all there is. That I do this all the time in grocery stores and things like that. Like, of course, there's security cameras everywhere, but sometimes they'll like put them behind mirrors or like things like that so you can't actually see them. And it's not quite as imposing as Big Brother-ish, even though you still know they're doing it. And I'm curious, yeah, if, like, if you built that into the system, because I was trying to see online, like I couldn't really see where the 360 camera is and like how noticeable it is and if that's intentional or not.
Yeah, there's a lot of times we're like, oh, that's a camera, huh? And then they kind of step back from it and kind of tell the story. It's weird to your point. You know, if you're in an elevator lobby, you just expect to be on camera and you don't think twice about it because you just expect that there's a camera there and it's okay. But it's more about these private areas where, you know, you're on the corner of the building, you're not necessarily expecting it. It's kind of getting over that mental hurdle a little bit. It's been pretty nice. And then the fact that we've protected some thefts on the job sites and protected their tools and their equipment, that goes a long way into them being accepting of it.
Yeah. Your tools, your equipment, it probably have, ended a few disputes over who did what, who moved what, where, when, that's a big one. Who left what, where, when is another big one. So that, yeah, that's a. And that speaks to what they care about, right? It's all about what they care about. They care about their tools being there, their supplies and their materials being where they left them so they can pick up and can get moving. And we've seen a ton of security issues and theft. I mean, right now, when you talk about, you know, copper and electrical, we can't afford the time it takes us to replace that stuff. That screws everybody. So, you know, it's really starting to connect a few dots that unfortunately we have to connect right now, right? We don't have the luxury of not, because it's a growing issue when it comes to the theft of that type of stuff as it gets more coveted, I guess is the word for it, or valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we had $1 billion of theft in the U.S. alone in 2020. It's a huge problem.
That number is the actual material number. It doesn't take into account the supply chain impact, the worker impact that was there to use it and it was there to work, and then the rework impact. Because I've heard of, you know, I heard of a fast food chain that was just about to open having most of its copper, including a panel, removed, and the panel was 48 weeks out. Wow. Well, they only can claim the 48 weeks, you know, they can only claim the material itself as part of that $1 billion number. But 48 weeks before that shop opens, how much is that really costing then?
Right. Like,
that's a ton of money, man.
Yeah,
so
opportunity costs. Yeah.
Yeah. Opportunity costs, et cetera. So I see that. So, but we are the crew, right? And we do go really far, and you came from the industry and are really still tapped into the industry. I'm interested in, before we move you along, is what's the big thing out there that you're looking forward to? It doesn't have to be with, you know, what you guys are doing, but just given the exposure you have, what are you most excited about for the next, you know, I'd say year, 18 months, you know, what are you thinking about? Where's your head at?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's definitely a lot of stuff going on, you know, both internally, but I think for the industry, I think for us, it's exciting to expand our partnerships and help enable other technology. There's so many folks that are, you know, struggling with, you know, having their robot maintained properly or their devices, you know, maintained on the wall properly or whatever it is, making their tech work on job sites. So a lot of these GCs are like deploying new tech, but, you know, the project team doesn't want to take the time to spend 5 minutes to plug it back in or do whatever it takes to make the tech work on the job site. So we've been having some ideas lately of, you know, not only helping our tech be enabled on job sites, but also being there as a concierge service that can help enable other tech. So not only providing it power and Wi-Fi, but also being there as a, you know, boots on the ground, checking on the system, making sure the connectivity is good, making sure everything's operating right. And I think that's going to be a big load that we can take off of our project teams, because there's, you know, engineers and superintendents that have this new tech, but when it stops working, they don't have the hour it takes to do the troubleshooting or talk to the startup team that's doing it and have them come out here. I think, you know, since we're going to have a presence in a lot of projects and we're integrating with a lot of project teams, we want to expand to where we are enabling all tech on job sites, and we can help all kind of these startups and all these new devices all get enabled and stay working on job sites. So that's something I've been thinking about a while, that, yeah, we need a better way of keeping these project teams engaged with new tech and not just, you know, kicking it to the curb after, you know, it doesn't work for the first time and not giving it a chance to fully understand how it works.
That's an interesting opportunity right there, because, you know, we talk consistently about the problem with the industry and its workforce and the workforce needs and how do you bridge that gap? Well, talk about an opportunity to take tech enabled people and concierge service, you know, the troubleshooting, the time it takes, but also then, you know, if you're taking, you know, young IT minds, you know, technology focused minds, people who are technology natives, they don't have to be, when I say IT, the classic word of what I was, but more just technology enabled and more adept at the troubleshooting, you create an opportunity for other companies to be successful and take the headache, just like Loris is already doing, but take the headache off the field, put it on a service, get it up and running and get people going again. And that's going to spread adoption. That's going to, and if you've got tech enabled folks, then they can articulate the problems. They can look at some new piece of equipment and say, no, actually what we're seeing out here is that the dust is going into, you know, this fan and it's causing it to overheat. And that's really the problem you're having. And the person in the field doesn't have freaking time, nor should they be necessarily giving you that information, right? They have work to put in place. One of the things that we talk consistently about in the industry is like, well, technology can enable and speed things up, but it can be a boat anchor and slow things down too. Mm. And that, you know, there's this, oh, we've always done it that way. Well, I can predict how fast we've always done it this way. And we need predictability. So to create change and to manage change, right? Change management is a huge part. Man, I think that's an awesome idea. And I think there's probably a ton of tech companies out there that have tools that could really use that person on the other end. So yeah, I didn't think you were going to go there, Mike. And it's a cool aspect to go to. Nathan, what did that bring up for you, man?
I'm going to go lean on it, because you're bringing up that lean philosophy of, like, at Toyota, like, what does a project manager do? Like, they spend all of their time supporting and troubleshooting and doing that problem solving, because everybody that does their work has a system and understands it. And if everything was perfect, you wouldn't actually need a project manager. But because things do go wrong, that's what a project manager does. Or like a team manager, and they have that kind of that understanding of the hierarchy and really the roles, responsibilities, and not this more like, I'm better than you because I'm in the field office, or, you know, something like that, that culture that we bring. So I think just so much of this goes back to culture, and that, yes, these tools will support better culture, but the more we can be creative about changing that culture and getting folks to be comfortable with the cameras, comfortable with measurement, comfortable with changing how they're measured. And you tell me how I measure and I'll tell you how I behave. you'll get that right one day, Jeff. But but it's okay though. It's close enough. At any rate, that's where we're at, I think, is that it's always comes back to people and getting folks to understand why we're doing it and have them feel involved in it, and that we really are all equal and just play different roles. And we should respect that as such. And that will go so much further than any, you know, new tech that comes out.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here having this idea too, because, you know, some of the problems in the innovation space, and I had this problem, you know, whenever I showed up on site, my hard hat was clean, no stickers, my boots weren't dirty, and I'd be lucky if I had the right boots, and you know, my safety vest is pretty unused. And now I've got this idea of these people that are charging your lights, organizing them, making sure that's all correct. Their boots are dirty. Their hard hat has stickers on it from what's going on. They have relationships, you know. You don't just deliver the light with them and don't do anything or check it out with them. You create rapport. You start having conversations. You know, I had to go play softball with the guys at Gallegos to create those. it would have been far better if that was on the job site. And that's all of a sudden there, and you're there for the conversations, and you know, Teresa's bitching over the water cooler about, you know, can't get to the plans for this or can't see that. And you're like, what floor are you working on? Where are you working? Let's go up there. I'll pop by there later on. And you pop by and solve a problem. And all of a sudden they're part of the team and their boots are dirty and they're all of a sudden they're just part of this process and it's part of enablement. And it creates a new set of jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, for us, you know, we're already out there. So if you have a tech that's like also deploying to the same project as another startup or as another young company, you know, hey, let's work together. You know, we can take a look at your equipment when we need to. Not only can we give you power and a Wi-Fi source so your equipment can work, but we can, you know, when we're out there, we'll take a look at your stuff and make sure that the owner is happy with your stuff as well. And let, you know, let's do this as a team. Let's, you know, I'm all about these startups coming together. There's very few, you know, you're seeing it now as the combining of you know, folks acquiring other folks, but it's all about integrations and partnering. And I think that's what's going to make us stronger as founders and as startups is when we can start, you know, taking the pressure off our customers together, trying to combine and really give our customers what they need without having to do 10 different solutions and bringing it all together. So, yeah, that's one idea. And I've got, you know, I could go for hours about things I want to change and do in the industry, but that's just a few.
That's awesome. Nathan, any final thoughts?
No, I love where you're going with this. I love that it's focusing on the hardware because like that whole idea of one to many and being, you know, one input source, but yet it can show up in a trade contractor's system of record or a GC's or an owner's and kind of that whole power of APIs. So yeah, love to see where things go and certainly we'll be passing more startups your way.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I mean, I love to think about how we do this. Nathan, we talked about it at the beginning of the show with the AEC Integration Summit where you've got, you know, the manual hookups and the automated hookups. And then, you know, at the center, you've got this strange manual automated input person device that handles a lot of what's going on and handles a lot of that friction we could all use to get rid of that friction. That friction is what's stopping most adoption, right? And so if we can all help each other, and you're right, Michael, anybody who's thinking, you know, they're going to take the world by storm in their own spot, just not seeing it as the gigantic thing that it is. And so if you can provide other people with better access, with better, you know, products, with better service and just less friction, man, it's going to be awesome. So we'll look forward to watching you. And I'm sure you're going to have people who are tuning in who are going to want to check out this thing that surprised us all, you know, the nugget of ConExpo ConAg. So thanks for hopping on the show and talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for having me. The questions and the insight's been great, and the idea has been great. So, yeah, looking forward to continuing the conversation for sure.
We will, and we are going to continue that conversation as we get into the news of the week because, you know, we've always got some great news. And now for the construction technology news of the week. All right, Nathan, last minute, jumped on, even had some articles in the wait. What do you got?
I'll make it quick. I was listening to your interview with Tyler Campbell and Construction Brothers and the just, you know, continuing to harp on this topic of labor shortage and how important it is to recruit and make our industry better. And so I don't know if NPR was listening to your podcast or if it's just we're all saying the same thing, but you know, I always think it's notable when the big outlets, NPR, put out this article titled, let's scroll up and see what the title, Where Did the Workers Go? Construction jobs are plentiful, but workers are scarce. And just continuing to hit on these numbers and at the end, literally talking about needing to make construction sexy, as I know you and Tyler were talking about, and that a lot of the challenge as well is not just finding trades and finding workers to come to the industry, but also finding teachers is another challenge that I hadn't really thought about. So I think just, again, more PSA on us needing to change the culture and make this an attractive, I mean, we already know it's attractive to us, but we also know that it's a frustrating industry. We have conversations, you know, whether we can have them in public or not about, you know, leadership in areas where we do have big blockers to innovation and to the right culture in our industry. So I think the more we can talk about this, the more we can change that and show how great this industry is, we'll fix this recruitment issue and really take advantage of all this technology as it continues to advance very, very, very fast. Jeffrey.
I think this is great. I was actually, and this is kind of normally I'm going backwards and talking about guests, but I'm going to go forwards and talk about one because it really matches up. Because that meeting with Michael, there was a bunch of DPR folks as well. And I've got a future guest coming on from that group whose sole focus was we don't have enough people teaching. You know, and this has always been a struggle, and I've talked to these union folks about it as well that I'm going to bring up. So we've had this discussion, and there, you know, nothing is infinite when it comes to resources. And I've always see that we have a labor shortage problem, but then I'll see that signups for a training facility hit max, and they're turning people away. And it's because we don't have enough facilities. We don't have enough training. We don't have enough access to continuing that education. We lost a big gap. We're not going to come back from that completely, but we do have to change it. And that's exactly what Tyler and I were talking about, is we need to go all the way into schools, and we need to go earlier, and we need to change the view of how we're seen. And, you know, both he and I talked about this. If you had asked me 10 years ago, well, let's go 11 years ago, if I would be in construction, and that construction and technology would be a boom and something I was considering the future of my career, I'd have told you were absolutely crazy, 100%. And in fact, I'll be honest, 8 months into my career, I was still struggling with it. And it wasn't until I found what became, you know, my JB Knowledge and James Benham and Rob McKinney and those folks and Josh Bone and others who were championing for the labor issues, for technology in the industry, I wouldn't have known. And now I've donned that hat, and I have a full career in something I barely have any right to be involved in. So I'm excited that I get to be here and see it. And I hope we can inspire some others to do it. And I also hope that anybody listening in that's made their way through this industry, and I'm not talking about the tech forward folks, I'm talking about the folks who have done it this way forever, that know how to do brick and block and masonry, that know how to do drywall and framing, and are carpenters and are electricians, that we need you. We need you to pass that knowledge, that basic information on to the future. They're going to do far more with it than you were able to. But if you look back to what you had before you started, you took it a long ways. So let's get that next generation involved. And this is where I get myself in a whole lot of trouble. But I just want to say we have to stop caring about where they end up in our industry. If they end up as a drywaller, as a carpenter, as they end up as an electrician, if they end up as a mechanical, if they end up as a construction management person, we have to create a giant funnel and then let them figure it out. Our problem is we're fighting over a set of resources that currently feels pretty finite. We can't do that. That's not going to work. We have to have union and non-union look at each other and go, I don't care which one they end up in. They just need to end up in a trade. They just need to end up in construction. And I am sitting in a nice spot where I can say that, because I have a huge appreciation for both union and open shops. I think there's use cases and arguments on both sides. And I think, hey, it's a path, right? So to me, you hit on a big one for me. Michael, any thoughts there since you've been through this?
Yeah, definitely that one hits home a little bit for me, especially like you mentioned from the education side, having studied construction management and school, you know, my best professors were folks that came from the industry or were actually still working in the industry full time. And they like found time to be side professors and give their feedback of like, hey, this is the project I'm working on, taking this class on a tour of the job site, like, here, this is a real environment, check it out. So I would just, throw it out there to all the superintendents, project managers, experienced trade employees that, I know that you got a full-time job and you got a lot going on, but you could teach a class full time, you know, or part time, and really start to give back that knowledge. Project manager on the Ohio State project I was talking about, you know, one of the busiest guys I know, still found time to teach a class at Ohio State about construction and do that. So, like you said, those are the folks we need. And I think, you know, it's not out of the realm to be able to do it while you're still in the industry and still in it. And if you want a little side gig and a side hustle, it's a really good way to give back and educate the masses and, you know, help yourself on along the way as well.
That's awesome. So maybe it's just me. I'll go through the second one real quickly because I think all three of us fall in the category of industry that have gone industry adjacent to technology. And lately I've seen a lot more folks that are actually doing that boomerang that have left industry, went to technology or some other adjacent and are actually coming back to industry. So as I'm scrolling through LinkedIn, I saw our friend Rick Kahn over at Stowe Building Group just posted. It's only a few days old, so it should still be live by the time you guys are listening to this. But there's an innovation manager position in that Stowe Building Group. And so just one example of many of, you know, the need for these jobs, the need for us to come back to industry and really be part of the change, be part of changing that culture, have the empowerment to come back there and maybe not necessarily act the same way we did the first time around and kind of to relearn from that. But you know, I'll just leave it with that, off my soapbox on the, labor shortage and bring folks back to industry. And, Jeff, what else you got?
Well, no, I'm with you because STO is doing a big thing of bringing people back here for innovation focused on it. They've got a couple of great jobs open, but we had Stephen Poppy on earlier and he made that jump back and I've been trying to normalize, you know, construction had this thing like you're taking all of our great people. It's like, we're not taking all of your great people into tech. There's a migration into wanting to help at a mass level. And that's what happens. But as industry gets and reaches this natural tipping point, the reverse migration and the matriculation of people, that shows a mature industry. Actually, you want that because I want people. I mean, how many times have you been sold tech by somebody who has no construction experience and you're like, you need construction experience, but then you get mad when we take someone from construction. And vice versa, you come from construction and you tried to build something and it doesn't meet the technology demands and needs and structure of a true enterprise platform. And so you're like, wait, we have to cross-pollinate. And so I think this is just a sign of maturity, a sign of the growth of the industry. And hopefully to your soapbox, the viability of careers in our industry. I mean, this one in and of itself is looking for AEC experience. But I haven't put any work in place in my lifetime. And I have a fantastic understanding of this industry from close up. It is not hard to learn because we have so many teachers, by the way, so many people in the field, so many people everybody in this industry, like so many of them are teachers, that you can learn as much as you want. So the only thing I would challenge STO there is that AEC experience is great, but having change management experience, having adjacent experience, whether that's in manufacturing, whether that's in oil and gas, whether that's in, other transportation, you got an opportunity. These people can learn our industry, but they're also going to bring an eye. Look, you want to deal with supply chain issues? You don't want somebody from construction. You want somebody from logistics. Go get them. Teach them our world. And they'll stay, by the way. We've proved that. So your soapbox became mine, my friend. So I had to do that.
Good pivot. I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not just a pretty face over here, sunburnt at this point from being out in Moab without realizing that it was going to be so sunny. So I'm going to pivot us today and I'm going to just bring up two funding round raises because there is a trepidation going into a downturn and some of the things people have heard about with banks. And look, things are getting tighter. That's a good thing, right? We all need to tighten our belts here and there and learn how to be more effective with our money and our profits, et cetera. And, you know, everybody should have learned over time that, you know, billions and billions of dollars are not going to just continuously flow forever. However, this one is about electric growth. Birmingham-based Conduit raises seed round as EV charging needs grow. This came out in March. So I had the chance to sit down and have a beer with Ian Hope, from the group. He said, we're living during a gold rush of era of electrification. And that means big business for his startup, Conduit, an energy management tool, because in the midst of this electrification gold rush, Hope said, Conduit is selling shovels. What is this all about? This is a cool tech startup. And by the way, Alabama in Birmingham is this little gold treasure trove of cool new startups. It's like, I don't know what happened there, what they're doing there, but whatever you're putting in the water there, Birmingham, keep it up, because we're starting to see a lot of cool companies coming out of there. And this is a tool that helps with the equipment design process for the electrical infrastructure. So as you see all these new EV cars coming out, they have to have somewhere to charge. That just didn't magically happen. It needs to be built into things, and people, it needs to be retrofit, and understanding the tools and understanding the design and making that effective and efficient. It's going to limit the growth of EVs if we can't keep up. And, you know, Josh Bone talks about this consistently. The electrification of our world, especially in the EV, is huge. So this was a cool round of funding to cover. Great company, and just excited to see them. I mean, Michael, you got to see this. You're in that space right now. So it's good to see that people are still getting that funding, still getting people behind them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Congrats to those guys. Yeah, definitely not the toughest time to fund, or not the easiest time to fundraise right now. So any kind of money you can bring in as a startup. I think the first time we tried to fundraise was right in the middle of COVID during 2020. So we know what it's like to raise at tough times. And yeah, no, to your point, you know, that it's such a pushback of EVs is, you know, the distance, like how far can I travel? Like, oh, I only have 400 mile range, you know? And so it's going to be an imperative to have these charging stations, you know, every 200 miles across the country eventually, so that, you know, that's no longer a barrier to switching from your old, you know, gas or diesel vehicle to an electric one.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking Nathan? Of Trojan horse, I mean, that the combination of solar and electric vehicles and kind of this whole, because I may have talked on past episodes about solar, and the orange button is like the standard. If it's sustainability, it's the green button standard. If it's healthcare, it's the blue button. In the world of solar and essentially smart grids, it's this orange button standard that Department of Energy is trying to push out and promote. And so I think this is a perfect example where startups like this start to take off, and then it's like, okay, but now what do we do with all this new data that we have and that we can potentially do stuff with, the same way you're thinking about it, Michael. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah, how do you take each of those situations and look for that synergy? Because if we don't do that in AEC, we're never going to, you know, get to those shared gains. We'll always find somebody that loses in the situation and they'll block it, right? But we got to have that infinite game theory, right, Jeff?
Always got to have the infinite game theory, man. That's awesome. Well, I'm going to wrap this one up with a real cool one here. Toggle AI raises $5 million. This is an awesome one because we were just talking about things that come out of industry. And it just so also happens that Toggle AI won the AGC National Innovation Award this year. So I got to see our good friend Allison Scott deliver that on stage at the AGC National Convention right around the corner from ConExpo ConAg this year. And Toggle was born out of coastal construction. So, you know, I think understanding that the synergy exists and the opportunities exist, Toggle AI, it's an AI for quantity takeoff. It's been incredible to watch. What honestly I thought in the beginning was just a pipe dream. I didn't, and even a lot of the architects I've talked to still think it's a pipe dream, and it's not. And I'm hearing more and more and seeing more and more out of Toggle. Great leader in Johnny over there. They've been awesome. It's been great to watch them grow. And they're really doing something that we don't have enough people to do, right? Takeoff, especially as often as plans are changing and coming out and iterating, you know, things that automate that process, you know, early on, things like test fit, you know, then you've got things like Toggle to look through and do the counting. Like, we don't need people to spend time counting, right? We need them to spend time figuring out if there's new opportunities, if the counts are right, you know, how to estimate those things, and if there's better opportunities for different materials. Like, there's just so many things that could be done here. So it was great to see Toggle win that award and then get this other round of funding in. So congratulations to the team over there. Keep up the great work. Any thoughts on a little AI there, Nathan?
This is just bringing back memories of on-screen takeoff and the very tedious efforts and how many mistakes I made. But the, also the estimators that would, you know, remind me that, you know, the reason they still take it off by hand is that, you know, that's how they understood the drawings. And I'm always torn on these things of like, how much time do you spend letting the automation do its thing and then checking it on the back end and kind of making sure that it didn't make mistakes versus doing it yourself and definitely making a mistake, but kind of learning through it. I don't think there is a right answer. It'll be somewhere in the middle.
Not somewhere in the riddle, right, Michael?
Yeah, that's a good point. I was, you know, when Jeff, after you finished your spiel, I was like, this is genius. AI can do all of estimating now. Like, we don't need anything. It was like the most monotonous thing that, you know, I did when I was working at Turner. And then Nathan, you brought up a good point, like, but that's also how you understand the drawings. And so, yeah, I think it'll be a really good estimator with AI as a tool. And I think they'll, you know, find comfortability. We're like, okay, I'm cool with getting my door quantities, but if I'm trying to do, you know, what the hardware is, maybe I need to take a closer look and double check that still, because I'm not as comfortable with the AI doing its thing. So I think, yeah, it'll be a mix of engineer getting used to what pieces of that AI he trusts and then what pieces he still needs to dive deeper into himself.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, think about that, Nathan. It goes to the manage by exception, right? I don't need to know that I have 500 doors, but I do need to understand that, you know, is that door hardware, you know, capable of doing what I need? Do I have the supply chain to get it to, so I can lift myself up to do other things? Do I understand the plans that way? Yeah, in the old days, that's how you understand the plans. But are there far more ways now to visualize and understand and get close to the project? Yes. Is there also a need? I mean, if you come into my world now in the rise of pre-construction, right? Estimators are going through their own transformation now. That's why that went from estimating to pre-construction to, you know, we don't know what they'll be called in the future, but they are managing the materials and the understanding of what's available and what might be new options, especially as we're changing how we're being valued and judged, right? It used to be cost, cost, cost. I guarantee you now it's about predictability. It's about de-risking. It's about those things. And in the future, it's, you know, ESG and new materials and all of those things. So these tools, you're right, might just become part of the toolbox. It's, you know, bring it all the way full circle back to Loris, right? Loris is a new tool in the toolbox that's enabling a whole nother set of tools so that the field person can be far more powerful than when they started. That is no different than what we are doing in the office with the tools we're all building there as well. So, I mean, I think that's how we're changing the industry and inspiring them to be different and to do things different.
Yep. Preach. All right.
Preach. Hey, if I don't get that from Nathan at the end, I haven't done it.
I couldn't really say it any better. So I'll just, yeah, we'll leave it at that. Yeah. Just drop that mic.
I can't drop this mic. It's too expensive for that. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually a cheapo, but I just don't want to do that to anybody listening. I want to say thanks, Michael. Thank you so much. You were, again, the real nugget of ConExpo ConAg, and I'm appreciating getting to meet you. Look forward to seeing you out there on the road, on a job site, in more places, man, and all the best to Loris out there.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Nathan. I had a blast chatting with you guys. You guys are doing great stuff and great work, so glad to be a part of it.
Thanks. And if you guys need to check him out, check out GetLoris, L-O-R-S, LORIS.com. It's a real easy one to check it out. Nathan Wood, my CPC man, thank you so much for sitting down today. I will be seeing you in a couple of days. Sun shining out here, man. It's time for some slush skiing at some point.
Oh, yeah. And Michael, you're officially invited if you're available on Wednesday. It'd be a good conversation on location tagging and how you guys might fit into this whole shared pain we're talking about. So I'll shoot you the invite. Right.
Cool, man. I might check it out. Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Michael Filippakis. To read all our news stories, to learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com.